this is where architecture firms need to go and evolve if we're gonna tackle this, the challenges that are out there facing our societies, be it environmental issues around climate change, be it social issues around homelessness, around urban design and planning, around transit, all these kinds of things. You need an interdisciplinary approach. We took it upon ourselves as a practice to try to create that kind of model, and I think it's really cool that AAO rewarded that.
Hi. Hello.
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 Hello, and welcome to Architecting.
Hey, hello, and welcome to Architecting. I'm Adam Wagner. Our mission here on this podcast is to tell Colorado design stories, and recently we were able to do this at AIA Colorado's Design and Practice Conference in Keystone, Colorado. For me, this event is really a party where I get to be around all my favorite people, past guests, future guests, friends, and colleagues, and get them all in one place. This year, AIA Colorado graciously set up a glass podcast studio for me in the middle of the conference room, where I was able to sit down with all the keynote speakers and other guests to recap and dive deeper into the talks that they gave. This will be a series of short interviews released over the next few weeks. For more information and pictures from these talks and events, you can check out our Instagram page or go to aiacolorado.org. The third speaker is David Goldberg, the president of the 2023 AIA National Firm of the Year, Methuen. Dave gave an overview of Methuen's innovative and multifaceted firm model and how it creates a dynamic and supportive work environment while also completing compelling and award-winning architecture. Now here's the interview with David.
Hey, we're happy to be sponsored by Modern in Denver Magazine. For over a decade, they've been crafting fantastically curated content on Colorado designers and projects, spreading the gospel of good design within our region.
And I love how the goal of Modern in Denver aligns with the goal of this podcast, to better build up and connect the community of Colorado designers. So go buy a copy of the magazine at your local bookstand, subscribe to their weekly email list, and follow them on Instagram.
Check it out.
Did you grow up in Washington?
New York. I'm from New York suburbs, and went to UVA as an undergrad.
Oh, okay.
And then I went for my master's in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
And that's how I stuck around there.
Nice. What was that made that decision to go to Washington?
Oh, the magic of the West Coast,
yeah.
And beauty of Seattle, and I'd done a lot of traveling around the country, and after undergraduate school, we drove up to Fairbanks, Alaska, and lived there for a little while, and I just always liked the West Coast.
That's an interesting combo of the UVA, like, background, yeah. And then to Washington. And
yeah.
UVA seems pretty kind of theory-based to me. And
totally.
It's pretty hands-on Washington. And
yeah, and I think that was the other thing for me. It was a really different kind of education that I was ready for. I learned a ton of UVA about critical thinking, theory, history, had tough professors,
right,
who are really, really challenging, and, you know, kind of motivated you a little bit through fear.
Yeah.
And students were really competitive with each other. It was great. I had some of the best years and got a great education, but the hands-on learning, the making culture, the community engagement. I went and did a design build project in a squatter settlement in Mexico City.
Nice.
And I was ready for that kind of work, and I didn't need the professors to, I was motivated by myself.
Right. Right. But it is interesting, like what Tom Kundig was talking about today, of the sort of intuitive approach versus the more intellectual approach.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of, maybe you had both of those, like the UVA, maybe more academic in some ways, and UVA is, I mean, in Washington, maybe more intuitive, kind of hands-on.
I think so. Yeah. And I'd say there, as a result, the students graduating when I was there, and there was a bigger mix probably of what was coming out.
Mm.
The product that was coming out of UVA was more similar. There was definitely different talent levels.
Right, yeah, of course.
You remember, you know, some of the kids just really got it, and other ones,
yeah.
Other ones, you know, it took a while longer to get it, and some,
yeah,
never got it, right? There was more diversity, I'd say, at the University of Washington as a result, in the kind of work people were interested in, and the things they were interested in designing, and you know, great furniture making studios, lighting design studios where you build light fixtures, design builds. So Steve Bedanes has been there forever from Jersey Devil.
Yeah.
You know, and he's built something with students every year for probably 30 years. And so there's this whole culture of that.
Yeah.
And it was cool.
It's interesting, like you running through that list, and I feel like one of the things I got from your talk most maybe was this word of range. You know, yeah. It was just so much. Congratulations on the Firm of the Year award, and your talk was great where you really dove into the whole structure of the firm and like the whole structure, right? There's so much going on, so many aspects of it. Do you want to kind of summarize a little bit, talk about why you think you were awarded the Firm of the Year and what were those things that kind of stood out and make you guys different?
Yeah, well, I'd say, the National AA Firm Award, it's there's an entry point, a baseline to get on that kind of coveted short list of firms that are nominated to submit that can make it onto a short list. And you have to have the design excellence, and you need the peer recognition that goes along with that. But I think what helped our practice get to the next level, I think the leadership work we've been doing in sustainability for so long, and not just environmental sustainability, but moving into social sustainability and issues of equity through our practice, through our work. And we really leaned in. We're an interdisciplinary firm. We have over 20 landscape architects. We have a large team of interior designers. We have urban designers and planners, people who don't identify as architects.
Right.
And they're important parts of our practice. Rather than structure our submittal in a way to kind of avoid that, we actually leaned in on that and tried to make the case that this is where architecture firms need to go and evolve if we're gonna tackle the challenges that are out there facing our society, is be it environmental issues around climate change, be it social issues around homelessness, around urban design and planning, around transit, all these kinds of things. You need an interdisciplinary approach. I think a lot of the design schools, while they might have multiple disciplines within their college, they're not actually teaching that way.
Right.
And so we took it upon ourselves as a practice to try to create that kind of model. And I think it's really cool that AAO rewarded that, because right. It was a little risky for us to go in that way and lean in on that issue and say, hey, listen, architects, we put that diagram up there, that diagram I shared about the old model of the architect and everybody else.
Right.
That was in our submittal to the National AIA.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah. With a big X through it. Yeah.
He put this big diagram up, had a big bubble with an architect, and then three bubbles underneath everybody else. And then their approach is more of an open space with project, and then circles all around, interlocking circles of the architects, engineers, right, everybody else that's involved in the project.
Yeah, and we believe that the old model, which still has some value, and there's some really beautiful work aesthetically that gets developed that way, is really kind of centered around the creative genius or ideas of an individual, or maybe of a firm, but really not necessarily focused around the project and the users and the environment and the critters that live on that site, as well as the all different people it takes to actually design and build something. And so we put this project in the center rather than our own ego.
Right. It's interesting in the, talking about, you have this person's name on the door, right? But a person who's been, who died in 1984, right? And you never met. And it's a sort of like fifth or sixth generation of owners, right? Contrasting that to, again, Tom Kundig, who is here, who that first generation is still here, and they're still figuring things out, right? And what I was impressed with your presentation was there's so much going on, right? And you're saying, like, there's not a lot of interdisciplinary work going on within universities, and I think it's because it's really complex, and your charts and your mission statements, it's really complex, but it feels like you've had those five generations to build up those systems and figure out how to make it work, right? And it sort of takes that.
Yeah, and it takes time, because a cultural change in an organization, takes a long time.
Right.
And so our practice is really different today than it was in the 1990s when I joined.
Yeah.
We weren't interdisciplinary in the same way. I think we had the bones there and the ethics and the values to be that way, but we weren't necessarily practicing that way as robustly as we do today. We started hiring landscape architects and leadership in the early 2000s, and it took a good decade before we were really firing on all cylinders and being able to do that. So these are long-term investments, and they're investments that can fail. So you have to be willing to take some risks that don't work out.
And you as the president, I know this is probably a pretty well-oiled machine, and it's not, again, not you as a bubble up here, but still, how you're able to help facilitate all these super diverse things going on. And so what does your day-to-day look like, and how are you able to help kind of steer this ship with a bunch of hands?
Well, first of all, it's definitely a team sport. And I'm not just saying that, it really is. That being said, we do have structures in place, and so we have a core leadership team that I'm part of. We have partners in charge that run all the different projects. I do run some projects still.
Right, I was sort of surprised by that in a way, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, you know, 3 to 5 projects at a time that I'll dig in on at different levels,
right,
and different levels during the different phases of the design. But then a bulk of my time is meeting with teams internally, be it design teams that need help because they're struggling through some issue or need some help or inspiration. Or one of the big things I do is help interview people and help grow our team with new talent and mission aligned talent. But what I like about my job is that I like the diversity of the work, and I don't think I could do anymore what I did in my early years of working on one job for 2 straight years. And I did that and I was good at it and it was really, really exciting, but I'm so fascinated and tempted by all these different things that are going on. So my day has a lot of diversity. I'd say dealing with issues around design, issues around money, dealing with issues around personnel. Almost everything relates back to people in some form or another. And then, you know, what I get to do is I do get to work on a few juicy projects at a time that I get really excited about. And those are fun. You know, I flashed a few of those up on the screen here today. Right. So that's special for me when I get to do that. But I like it all. And yeah, so it works for me.
Well, it's interesting. You have to be pretty unique where you started as a model builder 28 years ago and you've sort of sat in every chair all the way up, right? And I've had this conversation with a few people here this weekend of sort of those roles that are could be outside of architecture, right? That somebody else could come in and do, but can architects do it? And this idea of president and running a firm, right? You didn't go to school for business, but you know every part of it and able to synthesize that. It still has to take a different personality, right? But it's
I'll be honest, I think it's sheer luck and circumstance that I'm able to do some of the things that I do, because I wasn't trained for them. I to be honest, I never really aspired for any to have any of them. I never aspired to run a big firm and get up on stage. And I was the last person in the world anyone would have expected to be doing what I'm doing now. But I just lucked into landing at a firm where the culture resonated so deeply with me, and I could really be myself. The firm was pointed in a really exciting direction with the leadership that was in place then. And then the right folks identified me and kind of nurtured me into leadership roles on projects first, you know, designing projects and managing projects, and then ultimately leading some teams. And it all just kind of happened, but I never asked for any of it. But by the same token, I never said no when it was offered to me.
Right.
And so I just
knowing when to stretch and when to not stay in a safe zone, I guess.
Yeah, and it's been fun, it's been exciting, and I've had a lot of support. And my job now and my partners, who I love dearly, we have a really great leadership team who I'm really close with. These are good friends of mine. And our job is to really help do for that next generation of folks what folks did for us. Because it's our job to keep passing this firm down to the next generation and letting it keep getting better than we could have done ourselves.
Right, yeah.
That's what's fun.
Yeah. And I assume, I mean, with all the things you set in place, you have a pretty good retention rate and able to maintain that pretty good culture. I mean, obviously, post-COVID, things are a little more in flux, but yeah.
Yeah, I'd say the culture is healthy. It's been good. We have folks leave. You know, some folks, it's not a... I don't know whether you can have a good culture or a bad culture at a company, but I think every organization has a culture, and it's about it being aligned with it and feeling comfortable in that culture. And so I think what we're good at now is, while we have a lot of diversity within the practice, there's a lot of alignment around shared values, values around design, values around listening. It was really exciting for me. I ran into one of our clients here working with a project team that I'm not on. And she said, "Oh, your team is really unique. They're really good listeners." And I almost got like chills. I was really excited because that's like the number one thing that we hope our teams are doing, is delivering really good design but doing it through a process of authentic listening. And that's, those two things don't always come together.
It's a certain skill. Yeah, it's definitely a skill. And to be nurtured in that is powerful. And I think you showed a lot of projects, and you were talking about really emphasizing sort of when the stars align, right? When all these multiple circles around the periphery come together and create that really big thing in the middle. What was one of the projects that really shone the most for you that you had a big hand in or a small hand?
Yeah, I've had a number of projects over the years on big special pieces of land. Started early in my career with the Islandwood Environmental Education Center on a Bainbridge Island, which was, you know, 40 some odd structures on 255 acres, and trying to treat all of our own wastewater and generate electricity and educate school kids. And I'm still involved in that organization today. And so that was a really magical one that came together. And we started in the late 90s and the early 2000s. But there's been a number of other projects like that since then. The campus talked about at Chatham University in Pittsburgh, a new school of sustainability and environment just north of Pittsburgh. I think the magic is when you have a visionary client who pulls you along. So rather than that sort of model that I talked about of the architect's job is educating the client, when we get those clients that pull us, it can be really magical. They've got a big vision, and we're there helping them fulfill that vision. That's that kind of project. There was a really visionary president of the university who brought us in from Seattle to do this phase of work. We really clicked with her and her leadership team. They were hands-on. We're walking the site together. We were in multiple day workshops together, designing lots of options with, you know, workshops with wastewater engineers and mechanical engineers and structural engineers and architects and landscape architects and interior designers. And what I like is I love helping lead one of those processes and facilitating those processes and help. Annie, I don't care who comes up with it. When someone on the team comes up with like design ideas that do 10 different things and solve all these different issues all at once, that's just a real joy. So that was one of those projects where that happened.
Yeah. I love when you're able to really create that full integration, especially of systems and of sustainability and passive kind of system strategies. And it seemed like you guys were able to do that a lot by just your comfort at working at that large, complex scales.
There's a lot of comfort required. There also has to be comfort in having a mechanical engineer tell you that the building's the wrong shape.
Yeah.
Or the landscape architect saying that's not the right place to put the building on the land. And that's where it's not just listening, but it's actually, you know, honoring the different ideas and being able to, you know, authentically elevate the ideas that work the best, no matter who they came from. It's so much fun to see when those kind of things click. But we've had that on lots of different projects throughout my career and other projects that other folks at the firm have been able to do. And then if you can get it all the way from those really big picture ideas, and then someone creates some beautiful little artistic detail that represents those ideas all the way down to something really small.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the holy grail.
That's the spark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I get excited just thinking about it. Yeah.
Well, and kind of transitioning that, you know, again, a lot of different sort of cultural perks and strategies within the firm of getting people involved in a different way and utilizing them, you know. And one that I was really drawn to was that you're an R&D system where people are applying for research funds or time and just creating a large variety of mini projects and things like that. You know, it seemed like just in that brief kind of overview you gave, you know, a lot of different things going on. Are you at all working to make, allow those to go beyond the firm and make some of those public or share?
It's all fully open source.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're open source with everything.
Amazing.
The only time it's not open source is if we're doing work where a client is paying us and we've signed an agreement not to allow it to be open source. And we have a few of those research projects like that. But all the work that we're funding internally is all fully accessible, fully shared, and that's how we do it.
Wow. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, thank you for coming to the conference and really just laying out this been honest blueprint of how the firm is working and thinking about how firms can act on a larger scale and opening that information up. So
yeah, super fun to share. I think presentation I gave might make it look easier and simpler than it really is.
When you have a good graphic design team packaging.
Well, you put a good story together. And right. It's all true. Everything says true. But you know, it's definitely a complex organization that we run, and it's complex by design because it's fun and because it helps us achieve mission. But it's not easy.
It's complex in working because you've had a lot of failures in the past and being able to learn from it. And
we're always testing new ideas. And, you know, there would be simpler ways to organize a practice, like to reduce the tight amount of project types that we do or to really focus in and say, we're just going to do schools and healthcare or we're just going to, you know, but we're tempted too much by the mission, by the design opportunities. And if we can make an impact somewhere where we think we can do something great, and then we'll do it. And so it makes things a little more complex, but I've never once looked at my watch at work and wished it was later so I could go home. It's just the reverse.
Nice. Those hands are flying all day.
Yeah, totally. Thanks so much.
Nice. Thanks. Yeah. Good meeting you. Yeah.
You can visit architecting.com. That's architect-ing.com to see images from this week's guest.
And please rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.
Have a great week and keep connecting.
Hi, I'm Eli. This show is made by my mom and dad and these people.
Heidi Mendoza. Emily Childs.
Fernando Queiroz.
Zach Huff.
Trevor Notzko.
Aaron Best.
Kyle Brunner.
Rob Cleary. All right, let's get a coffee. See ya.
This is Sarah Hubbard, host of You and Me Kid, a podcast about starting and raising a family on your own. We just launched season 2, and I'm speaking with single moms, those still considering, and experts in relevant fields to give you a real sense of what the day-to-day experience of solo parenting looks and feels like. Plus, this season, I've partnered with California Cryobank, the number one sperm bank in the U.S. So wherever you are in the process, this podcast provides some support, humor, and helpful information. Listen to You and Me Kid wherever you get your podcasts.